This is St. Pete X, affectionately known as SPX. SPX brings you St. Pete's brightest business people, civic leaders, and citizens who share their insight and expertise as well as their love of our great city. SPX is presented by the St. Petersburg Group. Head to stpete.co to check out more episodes, and by St. Pete's most effective marketing agency, Big C. Browse to bigc.co to see their work. Now enjoy the conversation. Hey, this is Joe Hamilton, and we're here on SPX, and today we've got a very esteemed guest, Irv Cohen. Good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Joe. My pleasure.
And normally we don't do the standard profile sort of thing and tell us about yourself and your background, but yours is so good that I kind of want to do that just for a minute. So you got some pretty big hitters in your, 30-some years up in Wall Street?
25
the street. Yeah.
Don't age me.
So what were some of those?
You make your own luck, but I've been fortunate in my career. I grew up on the finance side and got an advanced degree both in accounting and finance out of NYU, and went straight to working with, at that time, the Big Eight. And it gave me fabulous experience with Price Waterhouse and dealing with management at a senior level. It also taught me that I wanted to work on Wall Street. I was always very interested in the markets. To me, it was very important to be relevant. And that's something that I continued to be. When you pick up the Wall Street Journal, and anything that happens in the world affects my business. Mm-hmm. So I joined Lehman Brothers back in the early 80s when it was a growing firm. It was only $3 billion in total assets. You know, it eventually became $100 billion before it unfortunately went out of business. However, I joined the firm right when it was in its growth curve. Mm-hmm. One of the things about Wall Street, and I'll explain my other firms that I've worked with, is when you're there, you don't even realize what a fortunate bubble that you're in, because we had the leading technology. I'm working with the best people, you know, out of the best business schools. At Lehman Brothers, I brought in the first Apple II into the firm, basically, you know, to automate the accounting department. Mm-hmm. And once that came to the firm and the traders saw what was happening, it went right down on the trading floor and the derivative market created out of that, because you could break down cash flows and do all sorts of things, which you could only do with, you know, the big computers then, which were the holy grail. And the IT departments didn't let anybody even get near them. So I worked with Lehman Brothers for about 8-9 years and grew with the firm. I was chief financial officer. I was chief operating officer. I was chief compliance officer, signing all of the focus reports and things of that nature. But I was stuck. I was very good operationally, and I was also very good strategically. So I was the tactician and the strategic guy. And I really know how to run big operations, and I've done that throughout my career. But I've also been the person who's been with new products and new businesses and how to evaluate them and bring them into the firm. And I've done that every step of my career. So Lehman went on for about 8 years, and I got recruited over to Barclays Bank. This was the late 80s when the foreign banks wanted to get into the U.S. investment market. And basically, me and three other people were given $100 million of equity capital and said, build us an investment bank. That was probably the greatest, the most rewarding challenge that I've had. Literally, all the way from designing, you know, the letterhead, all the way through hiring the entire staff and building the systems and the marketing and everything like that. In a year and a half, we became a primary deal on U.S. government securities, the fastest it's ever happened, which is very important for the fixed income market. There's only 20-odd in the world. And basically, creating a business from scratch, again, is something that I love to do and I'm very passionate about. So I was able to help create that business and at the same time manage and run the entire infrastructure for the place. Actually did it too well, because I got asked to move over to the bank side and I became the chief operating officer of Barclays Bank in the U.S. They were going through some growing pains and some challenges in their organization, and I did that for a few years. And then I got subsequently, and I did a lot of work both in the United States and in London. You know, I was probably traveling back and forth as a minimum once a month through the whole process. A Dutch bank, ABN AMRO, came calling for the exact same need and requirement. The difference was they had a big bank in Chicago. So I was able to work on integrating the Chicago bank with the Dutch bank, also one of the largest banks in the world, and building a business for them in the U.S. and connecting into Amsterdam. And then I got recruited to my final Wall Street job, which was at JP Morgan Chase, which basically they were actually looking for someone specifically with obviously the background experience I have, but basically the merging of investment banks and commercial banks. Mm-hmm. This is a trend that has continued. People can argue whether it's been good or bad, and those discussions will go on forever. You know, they're bringing together and splitting apart, and the cycle goes round and round. But basically, I joined the organization to build their overnight, their short-term securities and banking and move it together. We basically do wholesale banking for every major bank around the world, and the overnight P&L and lending and creation of products around that to grow the business. Along with that came the great challenge of the relocation, and that's how I came down to Tampa Bay. Before 9/11, J.P. Morgan Chase had done an analysis of their human capital, and basically, to no surprise, they found they had too large a concentration in the New York area. Mm-hmm. So basically, a study was taken. I was part of this whole process, and it came down to Houston, Atlanta, or Tampa to move a major division. This was called their Treasury and Security Services Division. So the final decision was made to move it to Tampa Bay. It was a process that involved moving 2,200 jobs to the Tampa Bay area. Now, half of them came from New York. The other half, we went into the marketplace and hired people down in the Tampa Bay area. It was a great experience. You can imagine I was dealing with native New Yorkers who never left New York before, but once they came down to Tampa Bay, you know, their eyes
opened. I don't know if that's fair to Tampa or not. I think that's like the hordes invading. I don't know.
No, they're people, the way we used to say it, these are the people shopping at Publix and,
right,
you know, creating jobs and leaving and creating more jobs. So that's very important for any community. And basically, so we built a location in northern Tampa. It was three buildings, 450,000 square feet. It's since grown, and there's over 5,000 at this location now. So that is great for any community to be able to bring, you know, the higher-paying jobs down to the area. I had two challenges when I did that. One was personal, and one was my staff. Now, I asked my staff to move down there, and that's taking a pretty large risk. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, the Yankees train here, and they've got the beautiful beaches and everything like that. You know, when you work on Wall Street and the whole cluster initiative, when I worked at Lehman Brothers and I got an argument with my boss, I could go across the street, and Goldman Sachs was across the street. You don't have that down here in Tampa Bay. We've got a few financial firms, but they were sort of operating on an island. And I felt responsible to my staff and said, whenever I feel that way, I got to do something about it. I launched the Financial Florida Cluster Initiative, which became a statewide event. And we brought together all the financial firms around the area. It was primarily Tampa Bay. And we helped sell the area to bring other financial services firms down here. The whole cluster theory, you know, we friendly competition grows the whole market. Mm-hmm. So our biggest success was recruiting DTCC, which is a large clearing organization, you know, down to the area. But it was spreading the word, you know, that the Tampa Bay area is open, you know, for financial services.
Mm-hmm. How'd you do that? Or what was the most effective way? I'm sure you tried several things, but
the most effective way was getting people together and having the discussions about it and selling the entire community the benefits of the community. But the hardest thing, like any of these projects or challenges, is getting everyone together, working together, and understanding that there's common interest here, and the common interest helps the entire good. So it wasn't easy, but it succeeded. You know, because the cluster theory of economics is what makes any area work. You know, you go back to New York, that's what makes the advertising industry work mm-hmm. up there, the fashion industry, and Wall Street. And Wall Street's the best example of it, because all these Wall Street mega firms have all clustered within a few miles of each other. There's a reason for that.
Sure, it's done all over the world. You go to the market in Morocco, and all the pots and pan dealers are in one spot, and all the shoe dealers are in one spot. And that works. And I guess, over here we would call those districts as much as clusters, too. Just
exactly.
Terminology.
Exact same thing.
So a couple interesting things that the Lehman Brothers thing, you said you brought the Apple II in for the accounting department, and somebody wandered up, you said, from the fixed income derivatives?
From the trading floor.
And then they adopted it down there, and the rest is history, essentially?
The rest is history.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they had to depend upon these large models running into the large mainframes. Right. If you remember, this was the early 80s. Once they got their hands on a laptop, and of course it was a very primitive laptop at that time, and they took control of the process, you know, they put the young, you know, analyst on it immediately and able to split up. It gets a little complicated if you're not part of the, you know, they basically split up like a mortgage-backed security. They were able to break it up into its cash components mm-hmm. and break it down and sell other like securities around it. And the whole derivative market is basically what that's about. It's really redistributing cash flows and risk. And the ability to do that, it's very hard to give that to a programmer to do at that time. Much easier for the guy who understands the market, you know, to be the guy actually doing it. Obviously, that resource was never available before that.
Yeah, so what's the mindset there? You know, is this something that's still happening today, or was there a definite
period of renaissance where, you know, you were doing everything paper and pen, even trading. And now as these tools came along, all of a sudden they unlocked opportunities.
As I said, I was, you know, feeling like in a bubble. Wall Street exemplifies it the best because obviously there's access to capital and access to the mines. It's always looking for what is coming down. What's the next innovative thing? The big thing going on right now is the whole breaking up of the cash payment system and how do we distribute that? You know, bitcoins and things of that nature, how do they, you know, how accessible are they? You know, should they go to the market? I mean, the whole concern now is obviously cybersecurity. And how do we go outside and find the best and the brightest out there to be able to deal with? That's a constant search.
Sure.
That never stops, you know, for the firms that succeed. They never sit on their laurels. And the reason they've stayed in business and continue to grow, and some of them have telephone book numbers or revenue, is because they understand and learn how to do that.
So it's fair to say that a decent chunk of the whole industry is as much innovation as it is acumen.
Definitely. And being open to innovation. I ran the new product committee for a couple of years, and I also did at both Barclays and JP Morgan. I also filled in to my portfolio. I'm doing buying businesses where it would have taken us longer to build ourselves, and it's quicker to fill in because it's literally a market race against, you know, some very high-powered competitors. And you want to make sure that you're always not necessarily bleeding edge, but a cutting edge so that you're, you know, you're able to offer to your client. But it's both to your client and to your own business. Risk management is such a major thing in these big firms. You know, who's got the best risk management system and how well is it managed and how well is it tested and stress tested? You know, the ones that didn't do it well, you know, fell into some pretty big issues. Issue two about moving down here was personal. At that time, I had two young daughters, and moving down here, I wasn't the most popular person in my family, but they agreed to come. And I felt a responsibility in a strange way of wanting to work very hard at the financial, economic, and entrepreneurial platforms of the Tampa Bay area. So that if they had decided at some point that they wanted to go back to New York, they would obviously go with my blessing. But I don't want them to go because they couldn't find good jobs down here. And that was important then. It's equally important right now. You know, we all want to live in a community that is growing and innovating. And it's all about being able to keep our best and brightest right here in, you know, in the St. Pete market and area. Because not only is that the future, but that's the blood and the engine that's going to drive further growth. You know, when you try and do these big relocations, and I was part of one. I wasn't the corporate, and that's a problem. But if you try and do the big relocations, you know, those are long shots. But if you grow your own, that's the way to grow and for an area to mature, and the excitement stays and the environment, you know, is one that we're all happy and proud to live in.
And obviously we do a lot of work with the EDC, and that is definitely their philosophy. There's not a big expectation of drawing down. You know, and partly because we don't have the space and we don't have the transportation infrastructure and whatnot. So we're growing and looking to, you know, get those 100-person companies and things like that as well. So before we get out of the Wall Street days, you were obviously a couple of positions on from Lehman when they went to shut down. How was that for you? Obviously, you probably saw colleagues there, and that was a big part of your, you know, your formative.
Not only did I see colleagues, last year I ran into, at a conference, I ran into the former CEO who I worked directly for a few years. His name is Dick Fult. The years I was at Lehman, and I helped create their risk management system back in the 80s, it was probably the best, and I'm not saying just because I did it, but risk management was number one. They knew where every dollar was. They knew what the risk was. They knew what their positions was. I used to have to go to Dick every morning and go over the positions in the P&L, and, you know, if he wasn't happy, you'd be out on the you know, if you didn't answer him immediately with where he stood, you were in deep trouble. I just think that two things happen, and I feel really bad because when you were at Lehman, a lot of your personal net worth was tied up in the firm. So some former colleagues got hurt. But it was really the growth of the market. And ultimately, I'm in the camp that thinks Lehman should have never gone under. Obviously, I have emotional ties to it. But there was a lot of politics going on right then. And Lehman and Goldman Sachs were always arch enemies. And if you remember, when it went under, the Treasury Secretary was a former Goldman Sachs guy. So that, to this day, that's what Dick Fult says.
Sure.
You know, he thought he had an agreement, and obviously we see what happened.
Well, and you know, yeah, and Goldman, obviously mixed feelings about them. They're pretty entrenched in today's administration as well.
Yeah.
You know, people call them the world's bank. Do you have any insights that when you went up against them and as you've seen them exist through the different downturns we've had, how are they doing that, and what are your thoughts on them?
Well, having never worked there, and just as a competitor, I think they have a very monolithic, strong culture, and they don't suffer fools. And they're, you know, our current I guess he's not Treasury Secretary, Treasury Advisor Gary Cohn, was the CFO of Goldman Sachs. And basically, they were known to have the best risk management system on the street, and that they had, you know, literally knew where every single position was and everything. You know, what I was describing at Lehman was back when the world was a little simpler in the 80s. I'll never forget walking the trading floor with the chief operating officer at that time, Chris Pettit of Lehman. And he's saying, who in the world understands all the risk that sits on this floor? And that was 20, 30 years ago, before the mass derivatives and things of that nature. And we see what the final result of that was. But Goldman escaped that, because Goldman basically had their hands on top of the risk measurement that they employed, was able to capture all of that.
So them getting out early, and obviously they probably, you know, took opposite positions and whatnot on what they saw was higher risk. Was there a chance that, you know, did they have any sort of a obligation to share that information? Knowing, you know, I don't think it's a secret. If they knew the risk, they obviously had to know the consequences as well.
That'll be litigated forever.
Yeah. It's interesting. So living in that world of high performers, it sets your expectations. And you've been down here now for a number of years, and then we've had some good conversations about that. Where do we need to move here in St. Pete and in Tampa Bay? Knowing that there's all the pieces that drive the success in our entrepreneurial community and our startup community and in attracting corporate families, what do we need to do?
Well, let me just step back a second. The last couple of years, I've been working. I was a founder of Florida Funders, and I've also recently helped found Florida Seed Funders, because I'm a very big believer in the entrepreneurial community and helping that along. And I've seen it. I've seen it from both sides as an employer. I've seen it, you know, I have basically reviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of business plans over the last couple of years. I've invested in a bunch of them. I think we can match up with any region in the world. I think we're a young, growing area in this regard. And I think that we have to challenge ourselves to come together as a cohesive community, and whatever the expression is, leave all the stuff back at the office, and basically sit down and put the pieces together in a uniform basis. So get away from the cliches for a second. You know, basically invest in our next generation, invest in our community, invest in entrepreneurs, and not count on, you know, the Florida Funders of the world. We can do so much. But basically send a message out to the rest of the world that St. Pete is open for good ideas, good innovation, and will help you along with channels of funding in your early days. Because once you get past that first leap, you know right away whether you're going to make it or not. I mean, it's not that simple, but right. You cut down the odds. Investing is all about risk management and odds mitigation, you know, about early stage investing and early stage entrepreneurs. It's the same thing. You know, I believe in being a very active investor and being involved with the entrepreneurs. And we have a bunch of people down here who can mentor and coach and do things of that nature. We just have it dispersed. And if we could bring it together, whether it's under one roof or under one management, I don't know all the answers to that. But just that it's done in a real true partnership, I think we could grow and go a long way.
And I think some of the things like Tampa Bay Tech Forum and the Wave have tried to be that, the entity in the tech garage here. So unfortunately, I think the how is the challenge, and everybody's got their fiefdoms and their, you know, their realms that they control. And nobody wants to say, okay, I'll give that to you to become a bigger entity. And because again, a lot of this is, strangely enough, there's not money involved. It actually ends up being people who are doing this for things other than the money. Something we had talked about earlier, you know, at the level that things are happening, the acumen that's needed to do this correctly isn't there, especially tied to the potential financial return. Therefore, you get people like you who believe it should be done and do it versus do it, you know, specifically for financial incentive. And so what happens is people then derive different kinds of incentive, which are more based on influence and, you know, just being the king of the startups in this area or the entity here. And then when personality jumps into it like that, then it makes it even less likely that they're going to work together. And so, you know, where do we find the acumen that can have that objective drive? That's what I feel like we've lacked here in the entities that we've built.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it all goes back to funding. And if we could do a joint funding project, which basically shares the funding and shares the risk, it can then be under one umbrella. A lot of the entities that you just mentioned, be it Wave or Tech Garage or a bunch of others around, they're great at what they do, but they're feeders. Mm-hmm. What I'm discussing is going beyond the initial funding, but staying with the companies and being basically active investor, active management, and working with them as they go through the process. A lot of times, you know, we have found you give the company a $X hundred thousand and they're back 6 months later, you know, my burn rate's down, but it's still high and I need the money. That is not a successful entity or a successful process. And the other thing, we have a huge nonprofit world, and I hate that word, we'll call it social enterprise, who have the exact same needs and requirements as the startup community. And a lot of times people don't understand that, and that they have a passionate founder or executive director who needs the business acumen to really drive it forward for sustainability and to keep themselves going. That's the whole social enterprise, don't be dependent on grants and this and that, and capacity building. The same core group can basically help manage and train these entities. And I think that would help put St. Pete on the map. If we have an organization that can do those things together, we will stand out as a community. And not so much that, which is important, because that will drive other people here. But we'll also be building, you know, a greater community here. If we deal both our social challenges as well as our business challenges, you know, in a unified basis like that, we can tackle anything. We talked about this Trust Grow initiative that's one of our applicants for our social venture partner Fast Pitch. Imagine putting our best brains on a social problem. I mean, how great is that?
Well,
I mean,
but the thing, it still comes back to the same issue, is that the reason why it's a great, you know, so because it's out of context, it's Just Grow and Just Learn. It's a startup based out of UT that has sort of an aquarium with a plant agriculture element to it at the top of it.
That's a STEM initiative.
A STEM initiative, yeah. A really cool product. We were talking about it off air earlier. So is there a place that people can see that? Do they have a website or anything like that yet?
I'm sure they do, but I don't have it.
Just Learn, Just Grow, UT. That's a cool program. That'll all be in the show notes page at some point. But there again, you know, it's... I think what happens is people like The Wave are meant to stick with folks. They do have lawyers and accountants available to people wherever they are sort of in that stage. When you're coming back to more of the traditional VC model where they put their money in and then they help build the company, right? And they have the ecosystem in place. But you know, it's kind of the same problem, is that the people who have the money either are going to pay someone with the acumen, which they often do with VCs, or they're going to do it themselves out of altruism, which is what you do, but the incentive is not there.
Well, let's go back to what you were just discussing. I worked for a few years in the VC and private equity world. Mm-hmm. And after I left JP Morgan and flunk retirement, and I worked for some of the top, I worked for Carlyle Group. It's one of the largest private equity firms. And I was on a couple of their investments. And this is the same thing that happens with Y Combinator. So even on the VC startup world out west, if you get into that group, you basically are guaranteed a certain level of success because the portfolio work buys and sells with each other, does things together. That's what I'm leading to with this overarching group that makes sure we all do it informally.
Right.
You know, you'll recommend someone, I'll do an introduction.
Sure.
But if we've got a place and an organization that's doing this 24/7, imagine where we could get to just on a local basis.
Well, and it's sort of like district building, right? New York has a built-in advantage because they have Wall Street. And so you're trying to build it from scratch here. Carlyle Group has a built-in advantage because everybody wants Carlyle Groups. They get to pick from the very best, and they have the very best working for them already. And so it's an ideal for sure. But even people here, the best people here are not probably going to stay here to get their funding either. They're going to go if they need Carlyle Group acumen. So it's where do you play in that level of what money's available here and what acumen's available here versus what companies are available here too.
We don't have to play at the... You know, we're not going to be able to play at that time. You know, the mid-market is a fine place to play. You know, in the 21st, 22nd century, location is not nearly the same, you know, degree of importance as it was before. Used to say a VC, you know, if it wasn't in driving distance, he didn't want to invest. And I had that experience a few times. But as we grow and as we build the infrastructure here, they have no problem delegating.
Sure.
You know, and we could keep those people here as long as it looks like we've got a system and a process in place that works.
Obviously, we could talk about Social Venture Partners, which is an organization that you're very involved with right now. You know, do you see anybody in Tampa Bay that's could be what fits this vision that you have? Or is SVP the best fit that you see right now, and that's why you chose to be involved with them?
Well, SVP, just by the name, Social Venture Partners, is really taking, you know, techniques and the best practices of the venture capital world and applying it to the social problems and the nonprofit world. I basically see the two arms are come together.
Yeah.
You know, the for-profit and the not-for-profit world. You know, the things that, you know, the angel groups and the Florida funders of the world on one side and the SVP on the other side, those companies that come to them have the same needs and requirements, plus or minus you know, less than 10% differences at the end of the day. You know, to be successful, it takes every one of the requirements for them. One of the things that we have not done is building critical mass. Back to what you were just saying, when you have all these one-off, you haven't built critical mass. I went on a benchmarking trip 2 years ago to Nashville. Nashville has a Nashville Entrepreneurial Center just a couple of blocks out of their main music district. And they say that that's the front door to the community. And right in the same place is not only the startups and the entrepreneurs, but also the venture firms. And Vanderbilt University, it's their top school, has an office right there. It's kind of like bring everything together, mm-hmm. figure it out, and then it goes back out into the world of where it belongs. But everyone knows, you know, that this is where you have to go for the best and the brightest mm-hmm. in that local community. We have a few places around here that think they're that, but in all due respect, they haven't reached that level yet.
Right. So even considering SVP and what they're doing, that's something that you still see as something that needs to be built. There's specifically having the support network for the entrepreneurs that can stick with them as they grow. Sounds like with that sort of venture, it's going to be a quality over quantity thing, simply because for the acumen to plug in and have the time to invest, it can't be that many of them.
The Tampa Bay chapter is only in its completing its third year right now. SVP as an organization has been around for 14 years, came out of Seattle. There's 40 chapters in the United States right now. And basically with the same, you know, it's experienced entrepreneurs and philanthropists who want to be active givebacks, not just writing a check. And it's the same thing that I see in the investors in the for-profit. You know, if we can marshal those resources together, mm-hmm. you know, we can leverage on an exponential basis what's being accomplished, the return to the entrepreneur, or to the social enterprise, and the potential return, because it becomes a numbers game at that point.
Right.
You know, how many are you feeding? How many are you investing in, you know, increases your odds of scoring a success?
And when you say bringing them together at that point, what you're really talking about is the mentoring aspect of it. It's growing them, giving them, plugging in skills they need.
And it's both person to person. It's creating, and I know a lot of people in this area have tried to, it's creating the software, you know, or the system or the platform right. around that. And I know there's a bunch of efforts underway right now in different areas of the community trying to do that, but it's becoming systematic about it and the knowing go-to place.
Right.
And then it's all about execution, and then it's all about management. And it's all about being on top of your game and treating it like it's being passionate about
sure.
the group that's doing this has to be passionate about it, has to believe in it, care about it, and then great things happen.
Right.
That's why it isn't anything.
And that brings you back full circle to the problem, because to do that, you need the right people to support, you know, going back to just grow a great product, maybe not business people. So they need business people, and you can try to teach the founders or you can just be there to support them. But if you're there to support them, that's a long-term investment in your time, which then means the next one that comes along, you probably don't have that time for unless they're amazing, because all of a sudden then you can't do what you normally do or can't enjoy your retirement or whatever. And it's just not that many people that are in that boat, right?
So I respect what you're saying, but you know, you train the trainers, you sure. train other people.
Teach them to fish instead of give them a fish.
Exactly. We actually are kicking off our pitch competition for SVP in 2 weeks, the accelerator, which will culminate in the pitch. Mm. And basically, we're training the trainers the first week and a half.
Right.
And we have our first training session on Monday. And these are experienced people, but we're basically, you know, in their sectors, but we're basically explaining and teaching them how they should approach this and how they deal with, you know, the company, the personalities, the issues. You know, it's a lot of it's the soft stuff as
sure.
well as the hard stuff.
Definitely. It's almost all the soft stuff. The ideas are the easy part, right?
Always.
You know, and I think that's sort of the model. You know, we had talked briefly, or not briefly, we had a pretty long conversation about potentially a services company that could act as the support, because then one way to get through it, instead of trying to organize, you know, investors and, you know, trying to consolidate these different entities that support entrepreneurs, is if you could put a group together that had the skill set, sort of what Carlyle already has built into their model. They have the skill set available. So if you need IP attorney, you've got one, right? And if you need whatever, and in the Wave and in Tech Forum, and they do some of that themselves too. But an interesting model would be a for-profit version of that, which is available for some mix of, and where, you know, where you have some financial incentive and you can get sort of the role players in and they can make their living doing this. And then maybe the group, you know, instead of corporate profit, you have equity as your corporate profit or something like that. But then the people who are out there spending the money and investing can say, we want to plug you into this group of services that will help fill in all the gaps that you're missing as business people or whatever.
And by doing that, you increase the likelihood of success.
Sure.
And you've saved a tremendous amount of time for these companies to go down 10 blind paths. And then
right.
I can't tell you the number of startups or early stage companies that go and try and, you know, develop their own software or go to India and try to deal with those type of issues themselves, which is just.
Or get their cousin to do their marketing and, and think that just, you know, I have a website up. That's all I need. Life is good.
Show. Yeah. You know, we come in and we, you know, they flushed a lot of money down the toilet because you got to then start again on a more professional basis.
And the biggest stuff also is the stuff that isn't necessarily laid into the, you know, accounting, marketing is pricing is a big one. I see a lot where we have a company that I've been talking to. They have a product that they're trying to sell for that's based on financial data. It's putting out financial data and their monthly rate is like $150 or $200. And their next biggest competitor is $3,000, right? So, you know, without sort of thinking that through, it's, you know, do you want financial data that cheap? And, you know, if your next biggest competitor is 3,000, what's the difference between 200 a month and 750 a month? You're still, you know, there's a massive gulf between you and the next person up. And that can make the difference between A, hurting their position in the market because they've underpriced themselves and then just leaving all that profit on the table. And that's one of those things, you know, people think I've got a product and I've got a website and I've got accounting and they, you know, that's where that sort of stuff between the stuff comes in and really.
And the last, that's very important, the pricing, and equally important is the entire customer acquisition side of it. We get a lot of early stage startup companies that are looking for money and, you know, they want to. What do you need? Well, we're going to do marketing. Give us a couple $100,000 or something. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, they have to understand it's business development and they have to be the ones that are initially doing it and being out there and meeting and getting, you know, testing the product and doing all those sorts of things. There is a extreme lack of understanding around that in both the social enterprise world and the for-profit world. And we could really help bridge that. And it's both time and money will be greatly enhanced if we do that.
So would you consider the days that you're spending now, obviously you're working on Seed Funders, which is a little bit, it's Florida Funders, but a little bit earlier.
Right.
And then you've got SVP. Are you actively trying to build the solution that we're talking about here in addition to that? And how does that look to you as you sit right now?
Actually, I am. What was announced recently was that Orlando is starting a social enterprise accelerator and wants to be the leader in Florida around that. And a lot of that is what I just talked about. That's a joint effort between Rollins College and their community foundation, as well as some influential business people in the community. And it's basically a for-profit and a not-for-profit, you know, working. It's a six-month accelerator with awards at the end of it. And really putting a mark down for social enterprise as well as, you know, what I call your more traditional accelerator type of effort and going all in on it. And I really still, and I believed this a couple of years ago, and that's why I started down this path. I've been on a lot of boards and I've written, you know, checks to a lot of nonprofits, but I was only affecting one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Social venture partners gave me the chance to leverage that. And I think that that's the answer. You know, the more that you can touch and feel and bring together, as I said, you're contributing to your community. I'm all about investing in your community. Be proud of where you live. And, you know, we have a lot of social issues, even though we're growing greatly, you know, in the community. You know, along with that come a lot of challenges. And you can't rely on government for the answers. You can't rely on Washington for the answers. A lot of these innovative answers are sitting right out there, especially with our millennial generation, who's full of bright ideas, and they're not encumbered by the past. You know, and the solution for a lot of our problems are right in front of us. We just got to open the door to it and give them the ability to get out there and to talk to the right people and to meet the right people and enhance and have those conversations and have those dialogues. And who knows where it goes to? You know, it's always the serendipity at the water cooler. You know, it's always the, you know, where's it going to go? I've dealt a lot in my New York travels. You go up Broadway and there's the early accelerators were all in the lofts upstairs right off Broadway. You walk up there and the buzz in the place was just absolutely incredible. You know, that's kind of what we've got to work on right here right now. Got to bring that energy together. But we all have to take a responsibility for it. It's those of us like myself. You've been successful business people, and this is where your family is and you live. You better, you know, invest in that and be part of the solution and the growth, you know, helping make this a great community. And the reason the social aspects are so important, you know, SVP has been involved with Ready for Life, which helps kids aging out of foster care. If we don't help those people, they become the homeless on the street. They don't choose to be homeless. They choose it because, you know, the roulette wheel of life just got them in the wrong place. But if I'm an employer, I don't want to work in a community that is homeless. You know, it's not good for the community. So why don't we all get together and fix the problem and fix the social problem, along with what we're doing on the for-profit entrepreneurial side as well. We can do it. The problem is some of these larger, you know, nonprofits, you know, are not innovative, just like the larger for-profits, you know, the whole, you know, you got to reinvent yourself. A lot of them are, you know, fat, dumb, and lazy just because the money comes in all the time. But the new ideas and the new solutions, you know, they don't get air to breathe, especially with, you know, we all know what technology can do for any organization today. And let's let those organizations breathe and those innovators breathe. It can help the community a tremendous amount.
Yeah, I agree. So I'd be interested to hear, you're out and about a ton. Who are some of the startups that you're seeing that are doing it right? I think immediately when you were talking about that, I was thinking, man, a huge win coming out of Tampa Bay would be a great catalyst for some of that, right? It's just that attention, and that's a good way. And then this way information is received now that you want to talk about building a cluster, building the perception of a cluster. We're obviously trying to do that with the different districts here in St. Pete, and that's getting some more resources put behind it. Have you seen anybody that has a chance of being a win in your travels in the last couple months?
Yeah, well, we've got a number of investments under Florida Funders flag that has a chance to be wins. You got one right here with, I guess it's Presence right now.
Presence, yep.
We've got one in Tampa, I believe that's, or he's actually from Clearwater. We're the whole Tampa Bay area. Mm-hmm. Pick My Kid, which is the one where basically they help families pick up their kids from school. Believe it or not, that's expanding like crazy because mm-hmm. he's been able to sell to large school districts, and that's. We have another one called Homie, which we recently financed the early round, which is basically Uber for trade services. So for, you know, you need an air conditioning, plumbing, et cetera, guaranteed 1 hour turnaround at a fixed price. And that seems to be taking off. Some of the smaller ones, you know, we've got a couple of IT service companies. We've got, you know, I got a family business that I've funded that's called Case Glide that's doing, you know, it's IT technology for the property casualty insurance company. And they're very busy right now, what could potentially happen with this pending hurricane. So there are definitely good things happening here. And a lot of people are working very hard to do a lot of the things that I've been talking about. I know there's been a lot of talk about branding an area and doing things of that nature. I really think we can brand our community as one of these, whether it's social entrepreneurship, social enterprise, become, and in doing that, you know, we put our money where our mouth is, but we also then get some recognition for what we're doing, and that will help the growth of this community and will help drive other people wanting to be where the action is. That's always the case. And then, you know, if we do the right things around everything else I talked about, we can keep those people here and those companies here.
Yeah, and I think that I will say that I think the St. Petersburg group, and it, you know, that's why out of our conversations, I was excited that you jumped in and joined us. I'm hoping that we can fill that role, right? And we're not certainly tied specifically to startups. We're working with, because even HSN could have used a little digital transformation too, right? Even at the highest levels, the need is there, but the organization is what's lacking, right?
And I'm glad you reminded me. I wanted to, even big organizations have their own incubators, startups. You know, when I was at JP Morgan, I mean, we had major areas devoted to basically early stage startups. It's just the advantage had was the capital was there, but they still had to go through. So big organizations are doing the exact same things right now. And they would gain also by connecting the way I've just talked about.
Sure.
The HSN's learning, you know, one of the big issues, and I kind of laugh a little, we don't have the resources here. We don't have the resources are here. It's keeping them here. Mm-hmm. We've got some great colleges and universities here. People want to live in the Tampa Bay area. This is one of the nicest places in the world to live. We've got to make sure the jobs meet the supply.
Right.
And things that I've been talking about, I've researched this. I've looked at every project that's being done around the country. I've looked at social venture funds that have sprung up in Silicon Valley and Chicago and New York. This is the trend, and I hope we can get ahead of the trend and be the leaders, you know, in our region and the country for doing this.
Sure. I think the rarity factor and why those incubators inside large corporations work is because the senior skill set is a phone call away, right? And I think for St. Pete and Tampa Bay, and I'll speak specifically for St. Pete because I know it better. Right now, I feel like the next year, I'll call it fractional acumen, is important for us. Because I think people like you who have this experience, who have this knowledge, there's only one of you. And as you said, you can sort of teach the teacher, teach them the fish versus give them a fish. But I think for our best and, you know, for certain opportunities, just plugging people in, but having the group be able to support it and get the little pieces of senior level knowledge and experience, and then, you know, doing that for as many as possible, I think is... That's to me what the rarity factor is, right? We have the ideas, we have the spark plugs, we have the people that have the, you know, the energy to do it. And I think we have the money. You know, there's a misnomer here that the money's not here, you know, and Ruben from Presence was on a couple of podcasts ago and he was like, if you've got the right idea, the money's here, right? And so, you know, if you look at all the things that you need for success, just those plug-in skills, that little bit of, hey, your pricing's not exactly right, or hey, that's, you know, Facebook ads are not a marketing plan, right? That can really flip the switch between success and not, is what the rarity factor is. And that's what I was hoping to, you know, to solve with SPG.
And being a business-friendly environment is so key. One of the things that's really impressed me since, you know, I've moved full-time to St. Pete over the last couple of months, my whole family has, is the welcoming to business and having, you know, a chamber that is so business-friendly. You can't put a price on that.
Yep.
You really can't. And it's, you know, and the things that are happening here and the ability to get things done is priceless. And I think that's step one. But you got, as you just said, you got to leverage that and you got to take that, you know, up the chain, up the value chain.
And we can't go past talking about the chamber without giving some props to Chris, because he's, you know, like I said, I told you earlier, he's really activated me and it's being interested in the community and just, he's got a strong gravitational pull and he burns, you know, burns the candle at both ends. And he's a special guy.
I know Chris. I used to be on the board of Tampa Bay when it was Tampa Bay Partnership years ago, and he was a star then. And, you know, St. Pete did tremendous getting him as the head of the chamber. And I think I've watched his career all the way through and he's done fabulous things. He's the most business friendly chamber president I've ever seen.
When he came on an earlier podcast, and the first thing we talked about was the St. Pete Clearwater Airboat, which is this matchbox essentially that flew like 12 feet across the water, and it was the birth of the commercial airline industry, and they got passed by and they made it to the St. Pete Chamber. And the mayor's like, I'll buy the first ticket, and the chamber invested in them, and technically, you know, we birthed the commercial airline industry here by risking them, you know, the mayor risking his life to fly a thing across the bay. But his point was, is that we've always been open and ready to receive and act on opportunity, and business friendliness is in, you know, the very early DNA of the community. So
you can definitely see it.
So towards the end of conversations we do, and I think we kind of just did that with talking about the startups, but who's someone that you've, in your travels, you've seen that is doing great work? Can't be one of the startups and it can't be Steiner because we just talked about them, but that you think deserves a little more eyeballs for and a little more appreciation or just some awareness to what they're doing.
Mentioned in an earlier discussion, there's a professor out of University of Tampa, Dr. Kevin Moore. He actually lives over in Tierra Verde. He has been an entrepreneur, which is the biggest. He and I had breakfast this morning, which is talking about teaching versus doing, you know, how important that is for an entrepreneur. And he's, the last couple of years, he's run their entrepreneurial program. And I think he represents the type of individual that we need to leverage and be part of, you know, the success of the area. You know, he moved down here and he's here to stay now, you know, a couple of years ago, and comes out of Kentucky somewhere. And he's very happy here. And I think he's one that definitely deserves mention.
Great. Maybe we'll reach out to him and see if he'll come sit down with us. Well, I appreciate it. I've enjoyed our conversations we've had over the last couple of months. And
same here.
You're an unbelievable asset for the area. So look forward to working with you and watching you and all that good stuff going forward.
Fabulous. It's great what you're doing for the community here, Joe.
Thanks. All right.
Thanks.
You made it to the end of another great episode. For show notes, head to stpete.co to the show notes page, which includes links to all the resources mentioned in the show, as well as quotes and key insights from the show and information about the guest and the host. Thanks again to our sponsor, Big C. Head to Big C, that's BIGSEA.co, to check out their work. And if you like what you heard, make sure to share this episode on social media and leave a comment. See you next time.